Hey everybody, it's Aldo Gandhi, and I just want to let you know really quickly that our swag shop is reopened. DeepDishTees.com is where you go, and that's Tees with T-E-E-S. Clever name, guys. They're the new home of our merchandise. You can get t-shirts, you can get caps, you can get coffee mugs, you can get hoodies, you can get all sorts of good stuff, and you'll help out the bar room with the purchase. So head over to DeepDishTees.com. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Greg Gabriel Talks Football. And if you are living and breathing at about 7:20 Central Time tonight, you would have made it to another NFL season. Good for you. Greg, how are you, my friend?
Are you celebrating because I'm living and breathing or what?
We all are. I'm celebrating that.
Hey, you know, I got up this morning.
And by the way, congratulations. I told you before the show, I can just look down your Twitter feed and have and get so many topics for us to talk about. And the very first one is that congratulations, you are now going to be working with Eric Galco for the Shrine Bowl. And you listed on Twitter that back in the 1980s, and I remember this clearly, the Shrine Bowl was the college all-star game. Every year they would get 70,000 plus fans attending the game at the old Stanford Stadium. Eric Galco hopes to bring that game back to that level in Vegas this January. And you're going to have a small role in that, aren't you?
Going to local schools. I mean, local for me is Illinois, Wisconsin, Northern Illinois, Northwestern, Notre Dame, maybe Purdue. Mm-hmm. You know, that's about it. See some games and, you know, help him get some good talent. I'm excited for Eric on this only because I was at that game every year starting in, I think, 1984 out at Stanford, and went to it every year for, 30 years. Mm-hmm. And we used to always stay for the game. And the game was unlike a lot of the other All-Star games, the game was a spectacle then. And mm-hmm. the parking lots at Stanford used to start filling up with RVs, campers, et cetera, you know, like on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And it was like Shriners from all over the West Coast. And, you know, Oregon, California, Utah, Arizona, they'd all come in. And then on top of the regular football fans, and when I say 70, it was really closer to 75,000. And it was year after year after year, they'd had this big, huge parade before the game started. Crowd was always enthusiastic. And then, they moved it away from Stanford for whatever reason, I don't know. They were up at the new baseball park for a while. And then they went to Houston, to San Antonio, then down in Florida. And it's never been really quite the same. And part of it was the Senior Bowl. The Senior Bowl would like grab all the players and say, you can't play in another game. And when I started the scouting back in the 80s, guys used to play your two or three games. Mm-hmm. Like there was the Hula Bowl, which is back now. It's been back for a couple of years, but that still hasn't reached its old status. But you had the Hula Bowl, the East-West game, the Japan Bowl, which I went to twice. And sometimes guys would do all three. They go from Hula to San Francisco to Japan or something like that. And then some would go, and the Senior Bowl was after the Japan Bowl usually, or the East-West, one or the other. And then, you know, you take a all-nighter after those games and fly down to Mobile. And I'll tell you, 2 years in a row, flew from Tokyo to Mobile. I think it was Wednesday before I started feeling good.
I bet. Holy
cow. You leave the, you know, because of the time difference, game would start at noon Tokyo on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so it would be like Saturday night here or something.
Right.
Like that.
Right.
Okay. And as soon as the game was over, you'd go to the airport in Tokyo and then you'd fly to San Francisco and get on another flight in San Francisco, go to Atlanta, another flight in Atlanta, go down to Mobile. But the first flight from Tokyo to San Francisco, you know, you landed before you took off. In other words, you know, you were taking off at like 6 at night from Tokyo, mm-hmm. and you were landing at 7:30 or 8 in the morning.
My goodness.
Sunday morning in San Francisco. Then you wait an hour or so to get your connection. By the time you get down to Mobile, it was getting late in the day. And you were just dead for 2 days.
Well, you got a much easier assignment this weekend. You posted on Twitter that you're going to be heading to see the Notre Dame Fighting Irish play. And I got some highlights from their last game against Florida State. What did you see out of this Notre Dame team, and who are players we should be looking out for?
Well, in all honesty, I haven't studied their roster yet. Mm-hmm. And they've got a lot of underclassmen, and they can't play in all-star games. And it's really kind of weird. And in talking to Eric, they haven't come to an agreement yet between the Players Association, the NFL, and the bowl games on what constitutes a senior this year. Mm. Because of last year, remember they went back and like last year didn't count. Right. So everybody, if you wanted to take an extra year, you got the extra year. Of course, the school had to want to bring you back. And then your scholarship number went up. So it's like, okay, so if a guy had 2 years of eligibility left last year, this year theoretically would be his last year of eligibility. But because of COVID, he may still have another year of eligibility. So is he eligible to play in an all-star game? Hmm. Because guys who, you know, underclassmen, and I think that's an archaic rule, they're not allowed to play in all-star games. Hmm. Unless they've graduated. Once they've graduated, they're off the hook. But, you know, it's something I think that I get it when we first started that rule, and I was on the advisory committee back then. It was really to try to keep kids in school,
right,
and help the college game. But at that time, Aldo, mm-hmm. there was only 35 or 40 underclassmen coming out. Mm. Max a year, and then it jumped, and now you got like 120. Mm. You know, so why are you going to penalize that many kids and not let them play?
Yeah, absolutely, that doesn't make sense.
And it's not necessarily the game; it's the opportunity to interview these kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can get a lot of that out of the way during the course of the week at the All-Star game. Sit down with teams, and then you don't have to talk to them in that, you know, congested 15-minute time limit that you have at the combine. Hmm.
You know, Mule Skinner wants to know, when you were doing all that travel, Japan, yeah, San Francisco, Atlanta, and so forth, were you hitting the airport bars for some elixir? It's too tough to do that.
I got to tell you, though, in all honesty,
uh-huh.
I didn't pay for a hotel or a hotel flight for a vacation mm-hmm. for over 30 years.
That
because
is
because I had so many freaking miles mm-hmm. and hotel points. And I was flying basically, you know, I was living in Buffalo until I came here. You know, I was flying three different airlines. I was flying Delta, United, and US Air at the time. US Air doesn't exist anymore. Hmm. But I was just getting a boatload of free trips. And when the frequent flyer, when I started scouting is when they started the frequent flyer programs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know what they were getting into at the time. And they've toughened up the rules or tightened yep. up the rules a whole
right.
lot.
Right.
But, you know, they used to have these say in the spring and in the fall, you know, they'd have an extra thing where you really double dipped. You got your normal miles and then you were getting free flights on segments.
Mm-hmm.
So like every three segments, you got a free ticket.
Nice.
When I was working out kids in the spring, I was picking up like 10 free tickets.
Wow.
Just in the spring over a 2-month period.
Unbelievable. And how many kids do you have?
No, I mean, I was picking up.
No, I know, but for those free tickets, you could take the whole family on a trip.
No, you just turn in extra miles. You fly first class, especially if you got a long trip.
Now you're talking.
All right.
You're talking. I mentioned that I took a look at your Twitter feed, and you retweeted this Joe Banner tweet, and I wanted to get your thoughts on why you thought this was interesting. We have had multiple teams win and play in Super Bowls where GM and head coach weren't even talking. We have NFL front offices that don't get along at all and have won. Hasn't stopped many from saying that communication and collaboration are key factors in winning. Some head coaches actually thrive on the chaos. Tell me more.
Well, I saw that, 10 minutes before we came on air?
That's right.
and we retweeted it. No, there's truth to it. Not every single front office is a nice bed of roses. Mm-hmm. There's people that don't like each other, but they can work with each other.
Right.
And that's the important thing. So, and sometimes it's a power struggle.
Right.
You know, I mean, we had... can't say everything was always peachy and when I was working here, mm-hmm. you know, especially later in the years, but hey, that's par for the course. You know, right. you're working way through it.
And a lot of times that chaos, conflict can be helpful because you're entertaining different ideas. There's the battle of thoughts and so forth. But as long as there is support for whatever the final decision is, then that's kind of the main thing, isn't it?
Well, you got to remember this. Contractually, in most cases, I'm going to say, you know, 95% of the cases, mm-hmm. the head coach has control of who plays on Sunday. Now, the general manager, in a lot of cases, has control of the roster, 53-man roster. Mm-hmm. So he can, but... he could have a guy on the roster, but the coach don't have to play him. You know, so that's sometimes where you can get your bone of contention. And I know there was times here when, and I'm not going to say who the coach was involved in and stuff, but sure. We wanted to sign a player and the coach didn't want the player. And the coach said, you can sign him. I'm not going to play him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, then why sign him?
Right.
You know, so, I mean, yeah, the coach wins. So, and that's, you know, to me, that's kind of idiotic because the coach doesn't even know the player mm-hmm. and you get the player in camp and then you find out what he can do and what he can't do. And, you know, and in that case, I guarantee you the coach would have said, he's pretty good, you know, mm-hmm. especially considering where he went, what he did after, you know, the deal with us fell through.
Right. Well, and you did share that story about Lance Briggs when Lovie Smith came onto the team and he looked at the board and the subject of Lance Briggs came up and he was concerned about Lance's speed. You told them, don't worry about it.
Jerry and I mean, we're in the room. It said
Jerry Angelo.
Yeah, he was, you know, Lance was a 4.77 or a 4.78 at the combine when he came out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Lovie had the important pieces of his defense when he came here. And this is, you know, how he learned it under Tony Dungy when he was in Tampa, was you had to have a nose tackle and you had to have a three technique and you had to have a will linebacker. Well, he had that three technique and he had that will linebacker in Tampa Bay. And so right away, you know, when he came in here, we had those elephants across the line, you know, from Greg Blasch's defense. And we got rid of all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was Ted Washington and Philip Daniels, all those, you know, they're all – Daniels was a defensive end and he was about 320. You know, and Washington was, we'll say nicely 370, 375. You know, and then there was – what was the other guy's name? Starts with a T.
Tommy Harris?
No. We drafted, and at first draft, we drafted Tommy Harris and Tank Johnson, and we had Alex Brown from the year before.
Right.
And, you know, we went from and then we got a Gunlier, and we went from, you know, a totally different defensive front because, you know, we weren't playing a two-gap game. We were playing a one-gap game, and mm-hmm. you had to have different kinds of players. But, you know, Lovie was just looking at the numbers and didn't know anything about Briggs, and he didn't know that, well, yeah, he might time 4.75, 4.78, whatever, but he played 4.55 because his instincts were superlative.
Keith Traylor,
right.
There you go. Thank you, Jerry.
Remember that interception when he was, you know, stumbling down the sideline?
Hey, wonderful moment in Bears history, without a doubt. All right. I want to, before we talk specifically about some of the things with the Bears, actually, another tweet that you sent out, and you predicted that the Bears were going to be looking for a defensive tackle. And then hours later, Brad Biggs says that the Bears announced the release of Azuya Alufahi and Artavius Pierce, and in their place, Margus Hunt and Damian Square have been signed to the practice squad. You have any thoughts to share about Hunt or Square?
Yeah, I both of them played in the league. They've had their moments. Are they great? No, they're filler pieces.
Right.
Okay, they're role players. Margus is different than anybody else they got on this team along the defensive line, because he's like 6'8" mm-hmm. and got this big, huge, long reach. He's pretty athletic. He can provide pass rush from that inside position as well as being outside. You can do a lot with him. But my whole thinking, and actually I might have put something out the day before, when Woods was first waived on Monday.
Right.
And they officially signed Breshad Perryman. I thought that they might, I didn't know what they felt about this other guy, and I can't even say his name. So, mm-hmm. you know, Alufale or whatever it was. I thought, okay, they got him and they're going to bring in another defensive lineman because you only got five on the roster.
Right.
Okay, Mario Edwards is out on suspension for 2 weeks. At five, you got to have more than that. I mean, just for practice, you got to have more than that.
Yes.
You know? So I thought that Woods might be the odd man out, but they kept Woods and got rid of Pierce and this other guy and brought in two. But I thought all along that they needed two defensive linemen on the practice squad, and that's what they have right now. And the one guy, you got the third guy. I don't have the practice squad right in front of me, but you got the third guy who is a rookie, Kamara, who can play actually down or outside. So for practice purposes, he can do both.
Very good. All right. Another thing that I want you to help us fans understand is the NFL injury report. It came out yesterday, and we saw, you know, the startling news that Eddie Goldman is nursing some ankle and knee injuries or whatever. And again, Quinn and Mac are on there. And immediately, you know, everybody gets up in an uproar.
You're going to see Quinn and Mac on there every week.
Right.
Okay. If you've got theoretically, mm-hmm. if the guy's got a hangnail, you're supposed to put it on the injury report. So some teams purposely overdo it.
Mm.
Okay, but go back. Mac hasn't practiced a full week since he's been here.
Yeah.
Okay, and they gave Graham a day off yesterday. Well, that's because they don't work on the part of the game on Wednesday that he's going to be important. Mm-hmm. Today they do. So today he practices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, especially with an older guy, that's smart football. Now, I don't know what the problem is with Eddie Goldman. Supposedly something happened Monday, and it was just a walkthrough. So what the hell could happen in a walkthrough? But might have been warming up, and he just, you know, stumbled or something, twisted his ankle and knee at the same time. But how bad it is, or is he going to be out? I don't know. And nobody else knows either. So
right.
I'll tell you, but before we go further, I got one little rant.
Please.
That bothers me. And this started day before yesterday, might have been yesterday. You got two radio personalities in town that are very vocal and hoping that the Bears lose this week and lose every week while Andy Dalton is the quarterback, so Fields gets on the field faster. I think that is the dumbest, most ridiculous statement I could ever hear people make. And anti-team, anti-community.
I'm even more pissed off than you are regarding this topic. How could anyone feel that way? I mean, then you're not a fan. You're a fan of your own thoughts as opposed to being a fan. Here's the thing.
Now, you've been involved in media probably most of your adult life. There's always a second part.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they're not saying the second part. They want Fields, of course. Everybody wants Fields. Fields will play before the season's over. Okay, and you didn't draft Fields for 2021. You drafted Fields for a career.
Right.
Okay, and you want to make the most of that career. Now, whether that starts with no snaps or three snaps or five snaps on Sunday night and it gets a start the next week or he doesn't start until week 7 or 8, we don't know that. If Andy Dalton wins, and I do not think the Bears are going to win in L.A. this week. Mm-hmm. So I don't think people can use that as a fair assessment of what this team is. They're traveling cross country, you know, to L.A. You're playing really in the opening of a new stadium because there was nobody in it last year. So you're going to have a riled up crowd. And I just think it's going to be a very tough environment, you know, and also because, you know, it's a nationally televised game and McVay's going to try to pull out all the plugs. Now, I'll go on another rant about his quarterback, too, because I think Stafford sucks.
But, yeah, I want to get to that.
He doesn't suck. I just think he's a figment of people's imagination. He's a numbers guy. He gets great numbers. You know, but he's never won.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, you know, well, he didn't have anybody in Detroit. He had Megatron, might be one of the best receivers of all time. Yep. He still didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he had Georgia. He had the best talent in the SEC when he was in Georgia. This is pre-Nick Saban.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he didn't win. He didn't get Georgia to an SEC championship. But he gets drafted number one. I was here when he got drafted, and I studied the guy hard. We weren't going to have a shot at him. You knew he was going to go real high.
Right.
But I had that in my report. I said, hey, you got something wrong here. This guy puts up numbers. He can't win.
Now, people on the opposite side of that thinking will say he never had a rushing attack with Detroit. He never had a capable offensive line, that the entire franchise, entire organization didn't do him any favors. What say you?
I'm going to try not to swear. Nonsense. I don't agree with that. You know, they brought in free agents. They drafted guys. Maybe mm-hmm. some of those guys didn't work out. Maybe some of the coaching wasn't good. They go through coaches about every other year there.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't help the kid. But all of a sudden, the guy who's never won in Detroit yet put up all these fantastic numbers, he's going to go to L.A. and lead them to the promised land?
Mm-hmm. You don't see that, huh?
No, I can see that, you know, he's probably going to be better than Jared Goff. I don't think he's a whole lot better.
So you scouted Matt Stafford coming out of college, during his college years. You followed him throughout his NFL career. So what do the Bears need to do to frustrate him, to beat him, to minimize whatever he does well?
Flush him out of the pocket. Don't give him any time.
And one of the things Danny Shimon and I are doing the Bear Truth show tonight, and I was pulling some tape for him. One of the things that I noticed about Matt Stafford in some of the games against the Chicago Bears when he was a Lion is that he does a really good job of stepping up into the pocket and throwing accurate passes. So I'm no expert, but it seems to me like that inside pass rush is going to be very, very important to stopping Stafford.
Yeah, you want to get a good push. You don't necessarily have to get a sack from inside, but if you can collapse the pocket a little bit, mm-hmm. so he doesn't have that room to move up. Now, I think, you know, what we saw in the preseason from the defense and you know, left a little bit to be desired when you look at the numbers. I don't think that's close to what we're going to see on Sunday night and over the course of the next 4 months. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it was very, very vanilla and basic. Guys didn't play that much. Coverages were simple. And, you know, what they're actually going to do and how they're going to do it, we're going to see that. And that's one of the niceties of having a new coordinator. I think it's going to be a lot closer to what we saw when Vic was here, but then with Sean Desai's own little added taste to it.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be fascinating to see this defense unleashed on this Rams squad. I said on one of our previous shows this week that I don't expect the defense, the Chicago Bears defense, to start to gel until week 3, 4, 5, just simply because we've got so many kind of new pieces at the defensive back position. I mean, Jalen Johnson played, 12 games last season? I'm not even sure who's going to be starting opposite Jalen Johnson. Is it Kendall Vildor? That's Kendall a lock? Vildor. Okay. Yeah. So all of this brilliance that Sean Desai is supposed to bring into the defense, I'm not sure we're going to see immediate results. It could take some time. What are your thoughts on that?
They've had 6 weeks of camp since the day they reported.
Correct.
Again, they've been working on a lot of this stuff all during camp that we never saw. You know, in preseason games.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so and really when you look at it, there's going to be two main changes in the defense. The one corner position and inside linebacker. So Ogletree will be in instead of Danny, and you're going to have Kendall Vildor in there instead of Fuller. So you've got 9 out of 11 is going to be pretty much the same. And if Goldman does play, it's really that's an honest 9 out of 11 because he didn't play last year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and if he can't play, Blackson will probably start off at the nose. And one of those two guys they signed will be brought up to play for in the game.
Interesting. With Goldman and Trevathan likely out, Trevathan's definitely out. Goldman may be out. Do you think that the Bears are going to be more suspect versus the run that the Rams will be able to run on this team?
I think they're going to try to run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and part of that I think is going to be what Sean does, what he designs, how he uses his front to stop the run.
Right.
Okay, and then go from there. You know, I'm not into prognostication and things like that. That's not my shtick. So I just, you know, I'm looking forward to see. I like the suspense of looking forward to seeing what's going to happen because I never put any stock in the preseason. I haven't in 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, and I've learned not to. You can put stock into practice if you're watching practice every day, but who gets to watch practice every day?
Not many people anymore.
Okay. So, you know, that's always limited too. So, but I do believe Vildor is going to be a lot better than the question is the unknown because he hasn't played that much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I go back and I look at his college tape. His college tape was damn good. I don't know how he lasted to the fifth round. Other than he played at a little lower level of comp low Division One at Georgia Southern. They were FCS at that, or not, they weren't FCS, they were FBS. But it was at a lower level. They didn't play a lot of top Division One competition, but he could support the run. He played the ball really well. He had a lot of interceptions. He's a good tackler, good open field tackler. Well, hell, that's what you want, you know, in the league. So, you know, the traits are there. His workout numbers were top off the chart numbers. You know, he's a sub 4.45 guy. He can jump high. He's got, he's only 5'10", but he's got 32 and a half inch arms.
Yeah. Pretty.
So that allows him to play at about 6 feet.
One of the questions that's come in here. Oh, but by the way, regarding Kendall Vildor, we interviewed the executive director of the Senior Bowl before Vildor played in the Senior Bowl, and Jim Nagy was high on Kendall Vildor. And then after the Senior Bowl game, and then after Vildor's rookie season, and Nagy said, please be patient. Again, this is no relation to Matt Nagy, but he said, be patient on Kendall Vildor, Bears fans, because he is going to play at a high level in the NFL. So that's a pretty good endorsement.
Nagy saw the same tape I saw.
Yeah, it's a good endorsement. Good stuff.
Yeah, you know, he and I've known him for a long time. You know, he's a quality evaluator. But I said, we were watching the same stuff. The tape, you know, the eye in the sky never lies. Guy's a good football player.
Yep. Your thoughts, people in the chat room are all over Kyrese Tonga, the big nose tackle. What do you think about him? Because he could potentially see some playing time, right, if Goldman doesn't play Sunday night.
Yeah. I think he's a part-time player right now. The only thing I don't like about him, it doesn't hurt him. If he was playing tackle, is he's got short arms. And, you know, his arm measurement. Now, I got to go back up a little bit on that too, because I don't trust the arm length on anybody from this. And I think we talked about that from this fastball.
Yes.
Most screwed up measurement. And it wasn't done at the combine where it is exact. And you got the same guy doing it on all 335 people. So you had scouts doing it at the pro day, and it's in measurement that is so easy to screw up.
Yeah.
So all you got to do is look at him, and you know that he's, you know, he can't tie his shoes standing up. He doesn't have, you know, real, real long arms. And so he's strong as a bull, lower and upper body, and he gets a push, but will he be able to do against quality pro linemen, do more than that? I mean, he jumped out. He had his moments in the preseason, and I love his motor. The guy is a high-energy player. But to me, at least right now as a rookie, you know, he's a guy that you want to see play 10 to 15 snaps a game, you know, because you're always playing in a rotation. My gut feeling is either Nichols or – If Eddie can't go, either Nichols or Blackman, that he comes in and plays the nose, and he's done that in the past.
Right.
And you've got a guy that has done it in the past and played at a high level.
Right.
But you still want to, you know, especially against the Rams, you're not going to be in your base 3-4 very much. You're going to really be in that 4-2-5 or 4-1-6, you know, for 90% of the game. Yep. But still, you've got to get some inside pressure.
And Mule points out that Thomas had short arms in Cleveland. There have been Hall of Fame players at left tackle and various positions that who have had short arms, who have not had, you know, with the scouts, perfect measurements, but they make up for short arms or whatever.
You're talking the offensive tackle, Thomas?
Yeah, I think that's who he was referring to. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but he had over 33 inch arms, and that's fine.
Okay. Now, I want you to comment on what Tigger Killam said. He says that he fears the Bears' Matt Nagy doesn't understand how to use quarterbacks. Did everyone else see how Trubisky played for the Bills in that preseason game? Your thoughts?
You know, it's a valid point. because Mitch looked like a totally different player, but he was playing in a different scheme. And right away you're going to say, well, there's something wrong with Matt's scheme. But it was also preseason.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he was playing with some number ones, even though he was a number two that, you know, Josh Allen didn't play.
Right.
And they were doing things that he does well.
Mm-hmm.
So they tailored their game plan for when he was in there to emphasize his strengths. And really, he didn't even play in the third preseason game. So his biggest look all preseason was that game against the Bears.
Right.
And which brings up another point, too, because during the preseason, the head coaches do talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And if you recall, the Justin Fields started that game. And the Bills were blitzing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I guarantee you, Nagy and Sean McDermott worked together on Andy Reid's staff, you know, early in Nagy's career. So they've known each other a long time. I guarantee you, he said, throw everything at this kid. Please, you know, because I want to see how he reacts to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it becomes a learning situation.
Yep. Good stuff. Let me ask you this question. I've seen it brought up on all of these ESPN, Fox Sports shows when they're talking about Justin Fields and who should start. I mean, it's a daily topic on all of these shows. And one of the prevalent topics is they asked the question, who gives the Chicago Bears a better chance to win, Andy Dalton or Justin Fields? We know who the more experienced, better quarterback is right now. It's Andy Dalton because of his experience, and that experience allows him to make a lot of adjustments. He's seen everything, blah, blah, blah. But the better athlete and perhaps better fit for how the team is performing now is Justin Fields. Your thoughts, please.
Now, here's where I disagree. First of all, he hasn't, except for the Bills game, he hasn't seen a whole lot as far as NFL defensive schemes.
Right.
And I'm going to twist the comment around a little bit and say this. Justin Fields is the more talented quarterback. There's more things, you know, in his toolbox that he can do. Got a stronger arm. He can make plays with his feet. But he can't read a defense yet. Okay, and that's Andy Dalton is the better quarterback right now. And you can't judge Andy off of preseason. You got to judge the fact that he has played for five teams that have gone to the playoffs. He's been in four Pro Bowls over the course of his career. Sometimes he was an add-on, but you still got to be at a certain point in the voting to become an add-on. So he had respect around the league. You know, I don't want to throw him out before you see what he can do. I want what's best for the Chicago Bears. And I firmly agree with Matt in that you've got to let Justin Fields see the game. What he sees on Sunday is going to be a lot different than what he's been seeing in those three preseason games.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it brings up another point. Would you have a little bit of a set of plays for Justin in that game, some down and distance situations where you bring Dalton out and you put Justin in? Sure, why not? You know, I don't think it's a bad idea, and it screws up your opponent.
And the argument I keep hearing about that, well, he could get injured. Look at Mitchell Trubisky. They brought him in for a play, and he got injured. But it's football. People get injured.
Okay, wait a minute. Okay, now I'm going to answer that. He can get hurt if you play him and start him the whole game.
Thank you.
Right? I mean, what the hell?
That makes no sense. That just makes no sense.
Okay, we're going to start him. He's not going to get hurt if he starts.
Mm-hmm.
But if we bring him in for two or three plays, he might get hurt. Don't do that. Now, here's – and I got off what I was trying to make at before, sure. And I was talking about the two guys – you know, on one certain sports station here that are pushing for the Bears to lose. The hidden part of the story is, or the second part of the story, they want the Bears to lose so they fire somebody. And now they got their excuse to fire somebody. They're always looking for the negative. I can't stand the negative.
Yep, I can't either. I can't. I don't understand it. I got a good question here from 4,000 Clovers. He says, okay, then, should Mac Jones, Trevor Lawrence, and Zach Wilson start based on what you've just said? What do you think about that?
Theoretically, no. But now look at their teams. Let's look at the Jets first. Who do they have a quarterback?
They don't have anybody.
They don't have anybody. You and I could go play quarterback right now for the Jets and make the team.
You, not me.
and I can't throw worth a damn. You know, so and Jacksonville, they got rid of the only viable quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And Minshew. So they got no choice. And New England, from what I understand, you know, Cam Newton was struggling. I mean, struggling with the playbook. They had to cut things down. And one thing Mac Jones is he's very, very smart.
Mm-hmm.
So, and in New England also, is Belichick on any kind of a hot seat? No. You know, whatever, he's except for the owner, he's the man.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, he might be the man even with the owner.
Yeah.
You know, so, so where's he going besides nowhere?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's going to do what he thinks is best for the team. Now, I believe there's going to be a time when Justin Fields should get into play. You know, it was real obvious going back 4 years ago when Mitch was a rookie that Mike Glennon couldn't play, and you had to go with Mitch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do we know that Andy Dalton can't play?
Well, according to 4,000 Clovers, he says, yeah, Dalton is that bad. And our atrocious offensive line makes it a better argument to start the mobile Justin Fields. Now, I disagree with 4,000 Clovers. I don't think.
Yeah, why is he saying he's that bad? How did he get to four Pro Bowls and get you know, some average teams in the playoffs five times?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I'll go back to my one statement that I've used, you know, we use in grading pro players. You can win with him. You can win because of him.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Dalton is not a guy you win with or you win because of. You win with him. He's going to be part of the whole cast, okay? And he's smart enough. If you want to give him that bad term and call him a game manager, that's what he is. You go back and look at his tape for Dallas last year when Dak got hurt. He wasn't bad now.
He wasn't. He won three of his last four games. And those three wins, he threw two touchdowns in each game. And in the game that he lost, he was sacked six times. So that may be an argument to insert a more mobile quarterback. But even, you know, if you have
and the Cowboys' offensive line sucked last year.
Yes, they did.
Now you're going to let's look at this one. Everybody say, well, the Bears' offensive line is going to suck. Well, we haven't seen them yet. You know, Daniels played one game, half of one game. Afedi's played half of one game, 21 snaps each. And and the same with the left tackle. So the only guys who have played have been Mustafa and Cody Whitehair. Last year, you had a bunch of people playing right guard because Daniels got hurt. Mustafa was at center. Whitehair was at left guard. And, you know, Afedi, second half of the season, was playing right tackle. They didn't block too badly. Okay, and you had Leno on the left side. Now, everybody says, well, you shouldn't have got rid of Leno. Well, hell, I can go back to doing this show last year and people were screaming for Leno to get cut all the time. am I wrong or right?
No, you're wrong about that. I mean, you're right about that.
Yeah, okay. So I just think that, you know, they're going to be better. Now, do you have to worry about Jason Peters a little bit because of his age? Yeah, you naturally got to do that. But, you know, like I'm the only guy in the in the room that's been around Jason Peters, and that was in Philly. Now, granted, it was a few years ago, but the guy knows how to play.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I mentioned this last show or two shows ago. He's 2 months younger than the guy playing left tackle for the Rams.
That's right.
And he's been to a few more Pro Bowls.
That's right. Very good point. Very good point. Lots of great comments. I wish I could get them all in, but I need to move on. One comment here that it was part of my thought process in asking you was about David Montgomery. 4,000 Clover says that I hope that at least Monty's going to get 20 to 25 carries, but no one really thinks that's going to happen. Well, it could happen if they get off to an early lead. Then Matt Nagy then tends to be a little bit more supportive of the ground game. But if they get off to a slow start score-wise, then Montgomery will rarely touch the ball. No running back will, right?
Right, but I think this. I think the plan is for Williams to be playing a lot too. They're going to be a rotation going on there.
Interesting.
You might even see Khalil Herbert in there. And, fantasy people won't like that. Because, they want to see the guy get a bunch of yards and help their fantasy team.
Mm-hmm.
But, we've seen what Williams can do. Last time he stepped on a football field, he should have been MVP in a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he catches the ball very well. He's extremely fast. Better outside runner than inside runner. But he gives you a lot in the passing game. And right now with Tariq Cohen out at least another 6 weeks, he gives you something in the pass game when a running back is in the game that you don't. And Montgomery's a good receiver, but I don't think he's as good a receiver as Damian Williams.
Yeah.
And so I think, and I'm throwing a dart at the wall here. I admit that, but I think you're talking more 15, 18 carries, maybe 20, 22 touches total for Montgomery. But I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Williams has another 10 himself.
Yeah,
between receptions and runs.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that distribution between the running backs is. And now, then hopefully Tariq Cohen comes in. That'll make it even more interesting. And when I say in, I mean later in the season.
Right. And then the other thing that, at least from an offensive standpoint, is what we haven't seen in the preseason is Mooney's the only guy who played the preseason. He played, what, two plays?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was it.
Yep.
Yeah, we didn't see Robinson. We didn't see Goodwin. No, we saw the guy they picked up from New England. He played. You haven't seen Rashad Perryman. So how they're going to adjust the passing game to these guys, we haven't seen, and it's a guessing game for the Rams, because they don't know what the Bears are going to do.
I want to talk about Sam Mustipher, because over and over again, I'm reading in the chat, and you and I have talked about this in the past. We talked about it last week, as a matter of fact. But people are just saying that he's being pushed back into the defensive backfield. And I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but it happens because you're going to get pushed back into the backfield. The point is how far you're going to get pushed back. Help me understand what people are seeing here, that they're so low on Sam Mustipher's strength.
I know what I think part of it was. He was a free agent coming out of college. So right away, he must stink.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of interior linemen in the NFL that were low draft picks and free agents. Sam was a 3-year starter at Notre Dame. He's bigger and stronger than he was at Notre Dame, but he was like, the centerpiece, the glue of those good lines. He's technique sound. And you talk to people that understand line play. You can talk to Olin, you can talk to Duke Merriweather, people like that. They all say the same thing. Guy's a good football player.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does he Does he give a little ground in pass pro sometimes? Yeah, they're not an offensive lineman. You won't see Jason Peters really give ground. He can stonewall some people. He might get beat on speed, but he's not going to get bull rushed.
Right.
But he's not getting pushed back into the quarterback's lap. That, you know, that's a big difference.
Yep.
You know, you give up a yard or two, so what?
That's key. And it's also key that Matt Nagy dedicate more faith to the run game. Every time they lose a yard or two in a run game, it's like you won't see another run play called for a long time. But play calling is something that we won't get into. Although, unless you have a comment regarding Matt Nagy's play calling.
No, I hope he learned a lesson last year, because I thought Bill Lazor did a good job calling games the last third of the season or last half of the season, however long it was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so maybe Matt has gotten away from some stuff. Again, we don't know, because you can't use – I keep repeating myself. You can't use those three games in preseason as an indicator of what's going to happen. And again, just throw out the receivers there, and that right. makes the offense different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think with Andy Dalton, you're going to see a lot more quicker passes than we ever saw, you know, the last 3 years with Mitch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, real quick passes. Get the ball out of his hand right away. And that's one thing he does well is, you know, so if those things are open. Now, another thing, a quote during the week, I think might have been yesterday. One of the writers, beat writers, had it on paper. It might have been Patrick Finley, but don't quote me on that. In interviewing Perriman, he said, this is the fastest group of receivers I've ever been around. Well, that tells you something.
That tells you a lot. I mean,
first of all, he can run.
Yeah.
Perriman, I mean, he's a coming out, he was a legit 4.27 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But all those guys can run. Hell, the slow guys, that new guy they picked up, Watson, was going to be the punt returner. He was like a 4.5.
Mm-hmm. Boy, a lot of people in Chicago are really down on Matt Nagy. not that I'm really high on him. But.
Hey, you know, I get it, but you got talk radio doubling up on it, mm-hmm. you know, stirring the shit, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so he's got no chance. If I'm Matt, I never turn on the radio and I don't look at a newspaper.
Interesting comment here, getting back to Sam Mustipher just for a minute. Mule says that Mustipher's core is not built for superior strength. What do you think about that comment?
Huh? What do you mean his core isn't built? He looks like an offensive lineman.
All right, enough said. All right.
How does he know this? Has he seen him naked?
Come on, Mule. Fess up. Have you seen him naked?
Jesus.
I love it. All right. Which players, last question on the Bears, and then I want to talk about a couple of scouting things before we let you go. Which player on the Chicago Bears roster, which young player who has joined the team in the last year or two or three, are you most interested in seeing at progress as the season goes on? Is there a player?
Cole Kmet.
Thank you. Yep. Tremendous.
And only because he's from Arlington Heights and you're in Arlington Heights. So, I mean, you know, we got to give a shout out to the Burb. Yeah. No, I really do. I think we said it last year when we started doing this show. I thought that last year the tight ends were going to be a bigger part of the offense. It really didn't work out that way. I think towards the end of the season, mm-hmm. when Kmet got a grasp of things. But for that offense really to work good, and you look at Philly when Peterson was ahead, even when Andy was there, but when Peterson was the head coach, and then you look at Kansas City, you know, they got tight ends who are catching a lot of balls.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to see a lot of two tight end situations, whether it's Komet and Graham, or Komet and somebody else. I think you're gonna see that. And you, those big guys, you know, Komet 6'6", and he's got length, and Graham 6'6", or 6'7", with length. You know, it's tough for a defensive back or a strong safety to cover those guys. It's almost impossible for a linebacker to cover them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Komet needed to learn the intricacies of the game. He'll be the Y. Jimmy Graham will be the move guy. Call it whatever, you know, you call it F, call it H, however teams use terminology-wise. But after that, I think the next guy, the third guy off the bench, will be James. And he'll be, if they want to go like into a two tight end situation where the guy's blocking,
okay,
you're not going to have Jimmy Graham in there. You're going to have James in there because he's a good blocker.
Mm-hmm. And not that Graham is a bad blocker, because he's improved a lot over the last three.
Yeah, but he's still he's improved. But when he came into the league, he couldn't block. He was like a wide receiver. Yeah, he was a basketball player.
Yeah,
and he was like a wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he's still, if there's a line, I don't know if he's at the line yet,
mm-hmm,
as a blocker. But now if you bring in James and you've got Cole Komet, and now you're running two tights, you've got a different situation. Your blocking's a little bit better.
Yeah. Bear Truth 9 has a nice list of guys. Besides Komet, Darnell Mooney. Do you think that Mooney could make a leap and move from a, let's say he's a middle of the tier two receiver to a top tier one receiver, not necessarily in 2021, but 2022 and beyond? You think?
Yeah, I don't know if he's ever going to be a quote one.
Okay.
Okay. The arrow's going up.
Mm-hmm.
He had a superb rookie year, especially considering, you know, where he got drafted.
Mm-hmm.
There's people within the organization that think he's going to have a big year, but you only can catch so many balls. I mean, you know,
right.
Robinson's going to get his share. Komet's going to get his share. Mooney's going to get his share. You know, you look at it last year, and I don't have the stats up in front of me from last year, but hell, I think they had five guys with 50 catches.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. What you want is explosive plays. I don't care if he catches 35 passes, but if more than half of those are explosive plays, meaning 20 yards or more for a wide receiver, then I'd be happy.
You want to look at average per catch.
There you go.
And the average per catch, even though guys were catching balls, the average per catch was down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Going back to Bear Truth 9's list, this outside linebacker, I'm really intrigued by him. I was happy when the Bears drafted him in the middle of the draft in the 2019 draft, Trevis Gibson.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on him?
Well, I liked him coming out. And we talked about it, was last week or the week before. You know, somebody said, well, he reshaped his body. Well, he might have reshaped his body, but he was strong to begin with.
Yeah,
I went back to look at combine. He did like 26 reps or something, which meant he was a, you know, a 400-pound bencher coming out of college.
Mm-hmm.
Could he have dropped body fat and added muscle? Yeah, but he had to learn. Now, the one thing, the misnomer, and I think, you know, the Bears TV crew missed on this, is that there's, you know, he's a down lineman in college. He was a defensive end. Okay, what's he playing here? He's technically a defensive end because you're always a nickel. He's up on the line of scrimmage. Okay, so he was in a three-point stance versus a, more of a two-point stance now, but he's doing the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
He was an edge player in college. He's an edge player here.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But, you know, go back. Remember I said guys always have a big jump from year one to year two?
Yep.
Okay, well, he's already started to show that jump.
Yep.
We haven't really seen enough of Komet and from Darnell Mooney to really see any kind of a jump.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the same with Johnson over at the corner position.
Yeah. He's who is.
And Kendall Vildor. Same thing. You know.
Yeah. And when you talk about Jalen Johnson, his importance to this team is so huge, because if he gets injured or he doesn't play, he doesn't progress from his play as the number one cornerback on this team that's already has a suspect cornerback room, ouch, that would hurt.
Well, it's a suspect cornerback room in the eyes of many in the media. Mm-hmm. And granted, I get it, because there's not a lot of experience there. Most experienced guy is a backup, Burns,
mm-hmm.
who has, you know, started a lot of games in the league.
Yes, he did.
What? This is only a six. He's only a 6 year in the league.
You're right.
You know, he missed last year, but you know, he's a former first round draft choice. So, from an experience standpoint, it's a suspect group because we just don't know. We haven't seen. They could turn out to be great. They could be awful. We just don't have the answer, and we're going to find out quick enough.
We will. Artie Burns was dropped and then they brought him back. Was there any particular reason with all the machinations involved with salary or anything like that? Or was that just,
I don't know. Guarantee he's got the same contract that he had.
Okay.
You can, number one, he's a vested vet. Okay, so they're not exposed to waivers. He can't get claimed.
Mm-hmm.
The minute he got released, he was a free agent.
Right.
You cut side deals with these guys.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's part of the way you put your 53 together is in order to keep some people, and there's people you're going to have to put on IR, like they put Jenkins on IR, they put Danny Trevathan on IR, but they had to have him on the 53 because if you put them on IR before then, they're out for the season. Okay, so after you cut to 53, you put them on IR, so there's going to be guys you got to cut. And you can do it too. You can cut a rookie, but the rookie can get claimed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, where with the veteran, you just say, hey, paperwork, we're going to cut you. We're bringing you back tomorrow. You good with that? Yeah. Okay. I mean, you had the deal. He's already agreed before you actually cut him.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he's not going to agree, you're going to go to the next guy.
Right. Right.
You're going to find somebody that you can cut and going to, you know, re-sign 2 days later. Remember a few years ago, there's a guy they used to cut every Friday?
Yes.
Okay.
It was...
He never lost a penny.
Yeah.
Because if you're on the team after Tuesday, you're getting paid for that week.
There you go. All right. The last question I had for you, and throughout the season, I'm going to ask you questions relating to scouting departments for NFL teams. Nobody knows it better than you. So what is the scouting department for an NFL team doing today and for the next week or two?
Oh, the next week or two or the next 12 weeks are doing the same thing. They're out on the road. You know, you couldn't really make school calls last year because of COVID. So now you're making school calls again. So they're making school calls. They're going to practice. You don't have to spend the one thing that's different from when I started in the league is, and this is just within the last 8 years, that you don't have to necessarily go to the school to watch the game tape. You go to the school, you can sit in your hotel room and watch the game tape. You get last week's games are already downloaded into the system. So they can watch them. Okay. Those are in the system usually by Tuesday.
Okay.
So all the games that were played Friday and Saturday last week, the Bears Scouts had those, you know, in the master system at Hallis Hall, and they had access to it earlier in the week. So if you don't want to go in and sit in a room with 10 other guys and bullshit, and you know, I used to try to get into a room all by myself. So I didn't have to put up with that. You know, I want to concentrate on what I'm doing, not bullshit with a bunch of guys. And But you can do that from the peace and quiet of a hotel room now.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go back, you find out ahead of time, okay, when's the pro liaison and the trainer and the strength coach going to talk to the scouts? Okay, and you make sure you're at the school then, and then you go to practice and on to the next place. And then, you know, it's some teams don't make it a prerequisite to go to games. When I was with the Giants, we had to go to games. We often went to two games, mm-hmm. went to a afternoon game one place, and then there's a night game that's within a couple hour drive. You went to the night game later on. I mean, wore your ass out, trust me.
I bet.
I mean, the easiest ones for me were like if Michigan played in the afternoon and then Eastern Michigan at night. I mean, the stadiums were like 10 miles apart, but it's not always that easy.
Yeah. I find it to be a fascinating life for the NFL scout. I wish, you know, somebody would do it like a documentary and follow around a scout for.
Oh, it's been done. I mean, years ago on HBO, there was an old scout by the name of Red Phillips, and I think he's long since been passed, but they followed him around for a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. And he was a character, a real big guy, cowboy type guy.
Oh, cool.
But he was with the Chargers for years and years and years. Now, how good of an evaluator he was, I don't know. I mean, you never know until you're really with a guy. You can see what his work habits are at a school, how diligent he is. Is he a guy that flaps his jaws all the time, or is he a guy that, you know, sits quietly, takes his notes, and doesn't say boo? I'd rather have that guy. You know, how is he when he's watching practice? You know, so you can see the work habits, but until you read a report,
mm-hmm.
you really don't know how good he is.
Mm. I got tons of scouting questions for you. We're going to spread them out throughout the football season.
Well, one thing I got to bring up, the one big difference from this year
mm-hmm.
or from last year to this year, and it started last week.
Mm-hmm.
Decision makers, GMs, couldn't go to games last year because they were under the COVID protocol.
Mm-hmm.
They had to travel with the team, couldn't leave the hotel room or the hotel. Team hotel, couldn't have anybody in the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't go to games, so they couldn't do it. So now, like last week, everybody was out.
Mm.
You know, especially because he had a cut on Tuesday, and so you know you had the time then. You had your roster set, and then you know on Friday you could go, you know, travel, go to a game on Saturday. I know, being the Bills GM, I might have mentioned this last week, he had five games he went to over the weekend.
Ooh.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Wow. Man, I've got tons of questions, but we're going to spread them out throughout the season. We'll always carve out a little time on this show to talk about the scouting profession and, you know, what you're hearing and what you're seeing as a scout so that we can keep our eyes on the upcoming draft, which is a favorite topic for all of us here at the Barroom Network. We're also going to be on this show. What now, starting next week, we'll be on the day after the Bears game. So the next time Greg and I talk and you folks join us in the chat room is next Monday. I think it's going to be around 11 o'clock, 11:30-ish, whatever you decide, Greg, but we'll let people know as early as possible on our start time. The best way to find out what time we start is to hit the little bell that you see underneath your YouTube screen. It'll send you a reminder so you won't miss any of the fun. And of course, all of these shows are available on demand. Greg, I'm not going to ask you for a prediction on this upcoming game because you don't do
I already said I don't think they're going to win this week.
Yeah,
but I hope they play strong. I told you it's going to be a tough place to play. You're going cross country. You know, there's a lot of question marks. I hope they play a good game. I hope they keep it close. But I'm not expecting them to win. I'll tell you what, if they do win and Andy Dalton plays good, what's talk radio going to do next week? They're fucked. Excuse me for saying that. But their whole narrative for the last 6 months has gone out the window.
I love it.
But one thing, though, you know, because you're talking about scouting, I just want to bring it in. It's Please. A good thing because some people, you know, want to complain that the Bears gave up a number one in order to get Fields, even though everybody agrees it was the right thing to do. I'll tell you, I'm not so sure about this quarterback class this year. You know, the guy who was supposed to be the top guy, the guy from North Carolina, he stinks. did you watch that game last week?
Yes, I did.
He's terrible.
He really is.
And on top of that, he's a little guy. I mean, you know.
Greg hates these little guys.
he might be 6'1".
Mm-hmm.
Well, but he was terrible.
Man, he was. He really was.
Yeah, I said after the game, I said, you can't win a Heisman Trophy in the first week, but he was like one of the front runners. Sure as hell can lose it. He lost it. He's got no chance.
Yeah. I totally subscribe to that theory. That first impression can really dig somebody a hole they can't climb out of for that Heisman Trophy. Totally subscribe to that.
He had the world to himself. That was the only game in town
Man.
When that game was on, and he stunk.
Well, lots of great college football. Now you're going to Notre Dame for Saturday's game, but outside of that, are there any college football games that you're telling me, Aldo, make sure you take a look at?
I would have put up the schedule if I knew you were going there. So
let's do that next week.
I'm going to tape my University of Buffalo they're playing at Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
And now Nebraska beat Fordham, which is like a Division III school.
Mm-hmm.
Last week they killed them in Lincoln. But did you see any of the Nebraska-Illinois game?
Yeah, well, that was a great win for the Illini.
But then the Illini showed what they really are the next week.
Oh, my goodness.
So how bad is Nebraska?
That's right. That's going to be a fun game.
And Buffalo won 69-7 last week. Ooh. And so, you know, they got a new head coach because the guy who was there, Lance Leipold, is a friend of mine. He went to Kansas. Why he went to Kansas is beyond me. That's the worst, one of the worst jobs in America. But, you know, they gave him a lot of money. That's his retirement set now.
Yeah, that's why he went to Kansas.
I would have sat around for a better job. I would have waited another year. And if you look, he got that job because of the problems, you know, they had with the coach back at LSU when he was at LSU.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't get that job until March.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so otherwise he would have been at Buffalo again this year. But they brought Will Lundquist in at Buffalo. He's, you know, been a pretty good coordinator around college football for a few years, and African-American guy. And, you know, he came out big. He's put together a pretty good staff. So Leipold got him to bowl games the last couple of years. I'd like to see the same thing happen. But they lost when Leipold left, like five kids went in the portal and transferred to Kansas.
Yeah.
Well, from Buffalo.
And that's another topic I'd like to broach with you, this whole portal thing and how that's changed.
It's college free agency.
Yeah, exactly. It's the start of that. So we'll delve into that and many other topics here on Greg Gabriel Talks Football. Another great show, Greg. I learned so much when you and I get this chance to chat. And I want to thank everyone who joined us live. If you want more football talk, Danny Shimon is on at 8 o'clock. He's going to review some tape. And if you want some baseball talk at 2 p.m., it's the Parisi brothers talking Cubs, Sox, and all the latest Major League Baseball news. Greg Gabriel, we'll see you next Monday after the Bears upset the Rams.
Sounds good.
Okay, brother. Bye-bye.
Bye.